The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Home is Where the Art Is. Ashley and Shabazz Larkin's home is warm, familial, creativity-based, and unapologetically Black. It's a cold afternoon in Nashville. The sky is clear. The sun is out. When a ray catches your skin, you feel relief. But when that moment fades, the chill returns, bringing a full body shiver that can't be controlled. It's unusual weather for this region of the country. It's the Deep South. Middle Tennessee is typically tolerable this time of year. Climate change? Maybe. As a native New Yorker, I'm managing as best as I can in a cozy cashmere hoodie, a highlighter beanie, and Uggs. During the pandemic, a wave of creatives like myself fled densely populated cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York for this new Nashville. Job flexibility, cost of living, home ownership dreams, and a burgeoning arts and cultural scene that embraces Black and brown talent make it an attractive place to settle. When you zoom out like that, weather is trivial. The Larkins were ahead of the wave. Ashley, a psychotherapist and artist, and her husband, Shabazz, a multidisciplinary artist, uprooted their family and moved from the Greenpoint neighborhood in Brooklyn to Nashville in 2018, seeking refuge in their home state of Virginia along the way. 2 weeks turned into 6 months. 6 months turned into a year, she tells me of the family's decision to return to the South. We had to go back to where it felt like home. And although the journey home looks different for each of us, for this couple, home is a place of belonging. It's a practice. It is something and somewhere they tend to constantly. In this season, Ashley is making space for herself by nurturing her needs with the same effort and intention she pours into her family's sacred dwelling. Home as a space and home within are synonymous, she says softly with authority. I set up my space to support my well-being, my belonging, and my creativity. I need this space to take care of me, and I also want my sons and my husband to feel empowered and seen. The Larkins and their boys, Royal 9 and Legend 7, live in a southern cottage townhome on the east side of town. The tri-level three-bedroom crib features decorative coffered ceilings and crown molding, creating depth and detail throughout the open space. This home is ours, Ashley declares when I probe about their stance on home ownership. It's a space we got to cultivate and curate on our terms. That's agency and autonomy. Shabazz and I didn't grow up in a family that had all the wealth tips and tricks to pass down to us. We didn't understand the value of buying a home. We didn't know how you did it until they did. When you enter their 2,565 square foot abode, impervious, a Shabazz Larkin masterpiece grabs you in the foyer. The 60 by 72 inch acrylic on canvas memorializes the iconography of twins in Yoruba culture, signifying a powerful presence and a source of protection. In the living area, books, African sculptures, and textiles potted plants, a brass trumpet, and mixed media art are scattered about an ancestral wall, the family's nook to honor and remember their forebears, displays framed moments in time featuring the couple's grandparents and deceased family members they never got to meet. We have all these ways we try to recreate moments to remember in our space, Ashley says. I don't just want beautiful things. I want people to feel something when they come into our home, Shabazz adds. People give space power. When we realize our space is a blank canvas for intention, we have the opportunity to imbue it with meaning and love and all the things that make a home beautiful. An open floor plan allows Royal, Legend, and their remote-controlled gadgets to move about freely. The living room melds into the dining area into the kitchen, and in the far back is a sunroom that was recently converted into Ashley's office. Her personal sanctuary is flooded with light. I have a quiet sense of peace in that room, she says. Between you and me, she adds with a conspiratorial wink, this is the best room in the house. When curating their space, the couple typically allows the room to reveal itself based on the art they've chosen for it. More than a dozen original works by Shabazz are propped, hung, and slung across their home. At one point, we wanted to treat our space like an intimate art gallery. So, when folks come over, it was just a natural engagement with the art, she says. Ashley admits that at times she feels insistent on having a finished, put-together home, but in those moments, she gives herself a reminder, that's not real. Home is not a destination. It's a practice that's constantly evolving. Wherever you are, there you are, so be there, Shabazz sums up. Love wherever you are now, even if you're not your dream home, even if it's not your dream home, put those nails in the wall and move all the way in. The next article is titled, A Love Letter to New Orleans. Dear New Orleans, everyone knows that those blessed and highly favored enough to be born black and raised in the 504 don't suffer fools gladly when it comes to their beloved city. So, only by invitation do I find myself moved to express deep gratitude for the invaluable lessons you began teaching me when I was a wide-eyed girl child at 14, lessons that have shaped me into the woman I am today. For the past 17 years and counting, you have given my heart a place to call home. Since your inception, you have been the blueprint for Black joy, Black resistance, and Black culture worldwide. I am honored to hold your name high, just as you have held me. Deborah Big Red Cotton, one of your adopted daughters, now an ancestor, once said, "You don't choose New Orleans. New Orleans chooses you." And indeed, it was you who chose me. In the summer of 99, I found my girlish self cradled in your curves for the very first time. The incomparable Crescent City, you earned your nickname from your prime position on a crescent-shaped bend of the mighty Mississippi. When Ntozake Shang wrote, "If there is a moon falling from her mouth. She is a woman who knows her magic, who can share or not share her powers. I imagine she was also speaking of you, a city renowned for your rich cultural influence in shaping every facet of Black life and ultimately the world. I couldn't have known when my family caravan for 5 hours from my hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, to the Essence Festival of Culture, then known as Essence Music Festival, which we casually called Essence Fest, that it would be the genesis of a cherished 24-year tradition, one that would forever shape my vision of Black womanhood. Your View Carré streets were reclaimed by Black women, boasting all our shades and shapes, sashaying in colorful silky sundresses, two-piece linen sets, and hoochie mama shorts. They moved with a flirty conviction and were the very definition of taking over for the 99 and the 2000s. They were the most gorgeous sight my baby girl eyes had ever seen, and I couldn't wait to grow up and become one of them, a grown fly woman living in the spirit. Being the sister friend of Black women that you are, you chose us too. In 1995, under the visionary leadership of Mayor Mark Morial and Susan L. Taylor, then editor-in-chief of Essence, what was supposed to be a one-time party to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the magazine, a publication created to center Black women, blossomed into a 3-decade long love affair. While many would assume the party with a purpose found its permanent home here because no one outdoes you in a party, the truth is that nobody outdoes you in purpose. Your beloved guardian of cultural symbols, Baba Douglas Red, graced the inaugural Essence Fest logo with his ash, a vibrant red, purple, and green African-inspired 25 doubled as a celebratory mask adorned with piano keys and musical notes. Set against a royal blue, the bold gold text featured Aretha Franklin, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Aaliyah, and Frankie Beverly featuring Maze, a Philadelphia band that New Orleans chose as its own. My family wasn't there that first year to witness Maze, as we lovingly call the soul band, but for over a decade, we'd close out Essence Fest with their life-giving set. My first time in 99 holds a special place in my heart, though. That night, as I stood among the sea of Black women and their loved ones draped in pristine white ensembles to match Frankie's fly wardrobe, I knew I was part of something divine, as the opening notes of Joy and Pain filled the air, the drums, congas, and hand claps reverberated through our chest, igniting a familiar yet unrehearsed ancestral response. In unison, we chanted, "Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead," our voices rising as Frankie, in his signature white head-to-toe linen, teased us with Maze's famous synth sounds. The deep spiritual groove was a gateway to pure, uninhibited joy and freedom. And we moved as one band, one sound, electric sliding in all our perfect and playful moves with our singing and sanctified. It felt like I'd arrived in Black heaven, watching thousands sway together, our spirits intertwined. I realized then that something special lived here, not merely in Frankie Beverly and Maze's music, but in your essence, New Orleans. Mays always ended their shows with our unofficial Black national anthem, Before I Let Go, introduced to the world on Mays' Live in New Orleans album. It is more than just a song. It's a loving signal used to mark the end of any proper 504 celebration. When we hear that famous whoa, we all know exactly what it means. It's time to gather all that belongs to you, whether it's a purse, a to-go plate, or somebody's daddy, and make our way toward the exit. Unless, of course, we linger a little longer for the brass band's final benediction. But I always prefer to tiptoe out as Frankie Beverly's voice wraps around me. You made me happy. This you can bet. You stood right beside me. Yeah, and I won't forget. New Orleans, I won't forget. I won't forget how your bustling streets lined with southern magnolias hold the stories of ancestors who built you with bare hands, blood, and brilliance. They whisper wisdom to us through intricate Adinkra symbols woven into French Quarter ironwork. Si wo were fin o wo san Kofa, a Yinki, reminding those who listen to reclaim what we've forgotten, for it was the African intellect and imagination that first taught Europeans how to cultivate rice and survive on your soil. Without our ancestors, there would be no New Orleans. This country tries to hide the truth of our genius, but your existence reveals what it means to build, resist, and remember. I won't forget that your heart beats in Congo Square, where the Bambula rhythm kept the pulse of freedom. Code No Ear may have given the enslaved a day of rest on Sundays, but you choose to keep drumming. You gave this country our music, dance, and culture, which sustained us through the darkest times, and it all started there, in that sacred space. You birthed the foundations of jazz, R&B, and funk. You are the keeper of the rhythm of our lives, ancient and ahead of our time. I won't forget how your women taught us to remain unbowed when Governor Miro, featuring that Black women would threaten the social status of white women, passed the Tignan laws, forcing us to wrap our heads in public. We wore our tignan with pride. We made them elaborate, colorful, and bejeweled. We defied any attempt to diminish our free, fly, Black womanhood. Even after the United States repealed the Spanish law, we still rocked our tignans, stunning and stunting, the embodiment of refusal, both subtle and overt. You stood right beside me, yeah, and I won't forget. I won't forget that freedom or death is in your blood. The Haitian Revolution brought change to your shores, and you gave shelter to warriors like Charles D. Slondes, who led the 1811 slave revolt, where more than 500 enslaved Africans united to fight for their freedom and established an independent Black republic. Though the effort ended in their executions, it inspired a series of uprisings that inevitably overthrew the institution of slavery. Time and time again, you teach us that the price of freedom is high and worth the cost. I won't forget the Maroons' audacious spirit in establishing new communities while providing for their kin. They found refuge in your swampy outskirts with the aid of indigenous tribes versed in the secrets of the land they called Bull Bancha. The Black Masking Indians honor that enduring legacy, strutting through your streets in colorful suits of feathered splendor, each intricately hand-sewn and adorned with ribbons, sacred beadwork, and sequins. Your traditions aren't simply pageantry, but an ode to the resistance of African and Native American peoples. You show us what it means to be both pretty, and more than meets the eye. I won't forget that the Sisters of the Holy Family Convent, founded by Henrietta DeLille, were among the first in the nation to formally educate Black children. When the sisters created a haven for women of African descent called a spiritual life, they used their autonomy to defy oppressive systems and teach Black children, both free and enslaved. This revolutionary act had a lasting impact, and St. Mary's Academy, a renowned Catholic school in New Orleans East, is a living testament to their righteous rebellion. The sisters' groundbreaking work laid the foundation for Black education, a courageous and visionary legacy. You stood right beside me, yeah, and I won't forget. July 2007 marked a turning point for us. New Orleans, the Essence Festival, had its homecoming post Hurricane Katrina, welcoming back beloved figures like Beyoncé, then Senator Barack Obama, and of course, Maze featuring Frankie Beverly, cultural titan Baba Douglas Red, the festival's original logo creator, was welcomed to the ancestral realm, and I began my journey as a high school English teacher standing on the shoulders of DeLille. I had heard your call and made my way to you, a universe I had been orbiting since girlhood. But this time I came to stay. As I settled into my new role, I was fortunate to work at a school with a staff composed mainly of veteran Black teachers, a rarity at the time. In the aftermath of the storm, there was a mass firing of 7,500 educators, predominantly Black women. Those who fought to return often faced a cold reception and vilification of their work. The state had deemed them school system failures, while novice teachers like myself were hailed as saviors, which was far from the truth. Yet, even amid their immense grief over losing their physical and spiritual homes, their loved ones to a country's neglect, and due respect for their life's work, they still found the capacity to nurture not only our students, but young educators like me. They shaped me into who I am today by sharing the history of Black resistance in New Orleans and how the fight for humanity informs the present. Above all, they taught me how to love and celebrate life, even in the eye of the storm. I will forever defend their legacy as the backbone of your cultural and brilliance, for there is no culture without your first teacher, the Black woman. Their support and belief in me would prove invaluable as I navigated my own challenges during my first year of teaching. Despite passing the English portion of my teacher certification exams with flying colors, I struggled with math, failing 11 times while receiving little support from my preparation program. As a result, I was dismissed at the end of my first year. But New Orleans, your Black veteran teachers said I belonged. They believed I could pass that test, and they stood right beside me. I won't forget. I spent my lunch breaks learning alongside our students in the back of the veterans' math classes. On weekends, they invited me to their kitchen tables to share test-taking strategies, and whenever I felt down, bad, Mrs. Stokes, Mr. and Mrs. Peters, Mrs. Dennis, and Mr. Grady would remind me I had been called to teach black children and do it well. With their love and guidance, I not only passed the test within months, but saw the program that had dropped me ask me to return, as my classroom was exemplary. Of all my roles, none has been greater than teacher, and my guides made that possible. The day I earned my Master of Arts in Teaching and walked across the stage, my former principal and beloved mentor, Miss Lori, said, "We told you, little girl, you'd never walk alone." And that we walk by tens, hundreds, and thousands in traditions rooted in African rituals. When those brassy notes and drum vibrations hit our block, we roll out of our homes, cars, churches, black-owned bars, and social clubs to join the grand procession pushing forward. At times, it may be unclear who you are marching for, but the vibrant parasols, waving handkerchiefs, and footwork surrendering to the spirit of togetherness matter most. We march, we dance, whether in times of grief or moments of celebration. We release our hearts in your jazz funerals and second line parades. This city has a majestic way of reminding black folk of who we were before others tried to redefine us. And so we all walk differently, heads held high, bodies swaying freely, and never, ever alone. My former students, my forever babies, taught me that loving them meant walking with the spirit of those who shaped this city and inevitably their lives. Now they are in their early 30s, many years removed from our high school English classroom, and yet I still carry their stories in my gut. They would write about missing black hands holding their futures, their loved ones back in their arms, their teddies sitting on the porch, huckabuck ladies in the 7th ward, remembering the middle passage at the village over the river, hearing storms blow through without anxiety, making groceries at Circle Food in Trim, Adela, the storyteller, reading tales at Community Book Center, Mama Penny carrying on Mama Aretha Castle Haley's legacy at the Learning Workshop, and the sound of Baba Kalamu Yah Salam's voice in their 9th ward hallways, pushing them to tell their stories. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.